You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill for Thursday, the 22nd of February. Loads of great racing coming up on Thursday. Sedgefield, Huntingdon and Southwell through the afternoon before Chelmsford has an evening card on the poly track. Gary Catewell, James Millman and Chris Pimlott will be live in the studio from 1:30 to offer you preview selections and of course see the commentaries on the races themselves as well. But for now on the podcast, my name's John Gibby. Delighted to have back in the William Hill Racing Podcast studio, Mr. Andrew Mount. Hello, Andrew. How are you?
Hello, John. I was going to wave to you then, and I realised that wouldn't come across well on radio.
I mean, it would work for my personal entertainment, but no one would have seen it. Yeah. They would have been none the wiser.
Let's settle with words then.
Okay, we'll go with words. Words are the best way to talk. Yeah, I was trying to come up with a profound statement there.
Oh, I thought you were going to break into song then and a bit of a take that lyric then.
We'll save that for later. First of all, first things first, we've got to find out what your best bets are for Thursday's action, because they'll be queuing at the counters and getting these all into their bet slips right away, I'm sure, the listeners to the podcast. I understand we're going to Huntingdon and Southwell.
And all that money they would have spent on KFC if those restaurants had been open.
Yes.
Come into the coffers of William Hill instead. Yeah, I'm going to Southall for the first bet on Thursday. That's the 3:45. Very good class 3, 5-furlong handicap here.
And class 3?
Yeah.
At Southall, what's happened?
Exactly. Yeah, on a Thursday as well.
Yeah.
Who knew? Yeah, only 7 runners here, but I'd still like to be drawn lowish, away from that stand side rail, which is generally the worst place to be. At the last Southall meeting, I walked the track and it was noticeably deeper on the stand side. And I took the opinion that even though the 5-furlong race that day only had 7 runners again, I thought I'd take on the ones drawn in 6 and 7, and they finished well beaten. So Foulard from stall 3 of 7. It's got top weight here of 10 stone, but it's been absolutely fantastic form over course and distance. Winning his last 3 starts over this 5-furlong trip at sunny Southwell. Started off in Class 4 company on the 29th of December, followed up in a Class 2 by a neck from Tricky Dicky on the 23rd of January, and then last time out, again winning by a neck in Class 3 company, this time for Midnight Malibu. Now, in his career, he's only had 5 runs at the minimum trip, 4 wins, one of those coming on turf, and a defeat here at Southall when he completely blew the start and was tailed off at halfway. So, arguably unlucky not to be unbeaten over this trip. He's hit a rich vein of form since dropped back from 6-7 furlongs and even a mile at one stage he was tried at. And I think Foulard can continue his progression and complete the 4-timer here.
Foulard then looking for a 4-timer in the 3:45 at Southall. Up £4 for that victory over course and distance last time out. And looks to defy that rise and win again. And we're going over jumps for your other selection. I understand, Andrew, for the 4:05 Huntingdon and the Lady Protectress's Mare's Chase. And we've got all those old favourites from these Mare's Chases opposing once again.
Yeah, it's a good race, this one. We've got 6 runners. They include last year's 1-2, Antarctica de Tay and Desert Queen. Desert Queen, though, has become a little bit quirky in her old age, let's say, to put it mildly. And last time out, when the beaten favourite at Market Raisin in a similar contest, finishing 3rd by 14 lengths, was described as being reluctant to line up. Now, trainer Harry Fry generally has to go to the start with her to encourage her to jump off. And that's certainly not going to be an advantage at the likes of Huntingdon, which is a track that often favours pace. And so she did finish 2nd in this race last year, but she was the 11-10 favourite, and she did go down by 9 lengths. Jumped out to her left, hung right in the closing stages. So I say, with her quirks at the moment, I'd take on the 10-year-old. Antarctica de Tay is another one that I might be tempted to oppose. Finished runner-up last time out, but that was in a field of just 3 runners at Leicester. and no obvious reason why she's going to reverse the form with Gotaway, the five-year-old winner, who was completing the course for the first time since arriving from France and joining Oliver Sherwood. Gotaway could again go well here, the youngest horse in the lineup, but I'm going to take her on with Renee's Girl for Dan Skelton. Now, this one was showing a decent level of form under Patient Tactics over hurdles earlier on in her career, winning at the likes of Ludlow last season and Warwick. But it's since she's been switched to forcing tactics that she's really taken off. Now, she fell a hurdle race at Worcester under Patient Tactics back in June, but then she was switched to fences and switched to front-running tactics. First run over fences, she went to Worcester, made all at 20-1, winning by 11 lengths. Next time out, she went to Bangor, where possibly the sharp left-handed track didn't suit, and she was a little bit disappointing. But she got back to winning ways at Donny last time, up to 2.5 miles. And winning by 10 lengths from the consistent Song Sar. So I think from the front at a track that often favours front runners, I think Renee's Girl can make it 3 wins from 4 starts over the larger obstacles.
Renee's Girl then, the selection for Andrew in that 4.05 at Huntingdon. You mentioned Desert Queen being quirky. I absolutely love Desert Queen, but she does herself absolutely no favours. I don't know if you saw that race at Market Racing last time, but she was indeed reluctant to line up, then shot off into a lead of, I think it was about 20 lengths. There was nothing Nolfili could do about it, and she just stood no chance of seeing the trip out. And it's just stuff like that that she's consistently done over the past couple of years. I think she's got so much talent, possibly one of the more talented mares in this mare's chase division, but just hasn't been able to translate that into wins because of her temperament.
That's right, and let's hope for, with Renee's Girl likely to be up with the pace as well, let's hope that she doesn't set that one off and...
Yes.
Find that one races too enthusiastically in the early stages if she gets into a battle with Desert Queen. But I'm sure Harry Skelton will be sensible enough just to ignore that one if Desert Queen does what she did at Market Raisin last time.
The 4.05 at Huntingdon is the Lady Protectress Mare's Chase, and you can hear it live on William Hill's Racing Radio, that listed action, tomorrow afternoon at 4.05. Now, it's got to that point in the season, Andrew, we say the whole season's now about Cheltenham, but it really is all about Cheltenham at this stage.
Less than 3 weeks.
Less than 20 days to go, I believe.
20 days.
Well, 19 by the time most people will be listening to this.
Have you got a Cheltenham advent calendar?
I actually don't, but that would be incredible.
Yeah, well, expect to see me on Dragon's Den around this time next year. pitching the idea.
What's behind each window?
An anti-post bet.
Interestingly, while you say that, here at William Hill, we do a countdown each day where it's a different offer.
Uh-huh.
So today, as we record this, is 20 days to go. There's an offer at 20-1.
Right.
On Thursday, it'll be 19-1 and so on, all the way down to even money.
To evens, yeah. I was about to test you on that. What's the final day going to be?
Yeah, even 1-1, so even money. There we go.
You've done well.
Thank you,
you were good at maths at school, I imagine.
I was all right. Unfulfilled potential. Anyway, Nicky Henderson had his media day a little bit earlier on in the week. Of course, the champion trainer, and I believe the winning most trainer in the history of the Cheltenham Festival. I think I'm right in saying.
I think you are right.
And he's got his usual strong team ready for the festival this year. And in fact, Andrew, there's some talk that he may even be able to become the first trainer in history to have the winner of the Gold Cup, the Champion Hurdle and the Champion Chase in the same year at the festival. Do you see him doing that?
Yeah, very possibly. Well, he's got Bouvardaire, of course, who is likely to prove very hard to beat in his bid to retain his Champion Hurdle crown. He's got Might Bite, who's got absolutely rock-solid claims for the Gold Cup. I mean, he won the RSA last year. I was actually quite impressed with his King George win. I know a lot of people were poo-pooing the form because of the presence of Double Shuffle in second place and T for two in third. I actually tipped up Double Shuffle each way at 100-1, 66-1 that day because of his Kempton form.
Yeah.
Kempton is a course expert's track. You look at the first four home in the King George, they all had rock-solid form at Kempton. Double Shuffle was a winner there. T for Two was a winner there multiple occasions. And, of course, was a close-up fourth in the King George last year. Thistlecrack was a previous King George winner. And Might Bite, although not a Kempton winner, would have hacked up last year in the Quarto Star Novices Chase had he not fallen at the final fence.
He was a moral Kempton winner.
Exactly. So, effectively, it was all about the Kempton fall. And, of course, you had the likes of Bristol Dumais, who needs hock deep mud at Haydock and rarely performs elsewhere. Going right-handed on quicker ground was no good to him. Fox Norton's a two-miler, and Whisper was in there as an afterthought, really. So with the benefit of hindsight, Thistlecrack seems to have not be the force of old, sadly. So really, Double Shuffle and T for Two each way were knocking each way bets. Now, what happened in that race as well? There was a very strong pace, of course, Thistlecrack up there from the outset, Bristol Dumais making the running and disputed the lead with Might Bite. And the placed horses came from way back, Double Shuffle and T for Two. And I think Might Bite, although winning only by a length, did really well to maintain that strong gallop to the line. So I know visually it wasn't perhaps impressive, the winning margin wasn't impressive, but I thought it was an excellent performance. And given the fact that we've been here before with Henderson sending an RSA winner to win the Gold Cup the following year in the shape of Bobsworth, several horses have done that in the last sort of 20 years. And I think Might Bite, whose quirks, touch wood, seem to be behind him. No signs of him trying to duck out between the last and the second last fence this season so far. I think he's around about 3-1, 7-2. Might not seem supersonic at the moment, but I can see it being a lot shorter on the day.
I really fancied him for the RSA last year. He was my nap of the entire festival. There you go, there's a bit of after timing for you. But I remember he was a similar price going into the festival, around the 3-1, 7-2 mark for that race. And people seem to keep coming up with not very good excuses as to why he was basically the lay of the festival at that price. Now, people aren't quite making those claims this time around, but it does really remind me of this time last year. It is a slight sense of deja vu. Yep. People just seem to want to find ways to get this horse beaten. But the fact of the matter is, when standing up, he hasn't been beaten since November 2016, and that was his chasing debut.
Yeah, and again, if you want to poo-poo him, you could say that in his last three visits to Cheltenham, he's finished 5th, 7th, and won by a nose when veering all over the track. But I think since then, they've got to the bottom of exactly how to ride him, and we're going to see a different horse at this festival. I don't think he's going to repeat those antics. I certainly hope not. But yeah, he's rock solid. Bouvardet's rock solid, and to answer your other question, he's got Altior, of course, who came back and won on his first run after a wind-up at Newbury the other day. So yeah, certainly wouldn't surprise me. And if there's any fancy prices knocking around for the treble, I'd certainly be tempted.
Before we start recording today, we were talking about Braying Power is going to run in the Arkle. Henderson's been talking about him as potentially the forgotten horse of the race, and it's true, he hasn't had an ideal preparation for the Arkle. He's also had a wind-up since his last run.
Yes, funny horse, Braying Power. I've generally been against him so far this season because, I just didn't think he was a grade one horse. I mean, over hurdles, when you look at his record in grade one company, he was third of six, beaten five lengths at the Punchestown Festival. And then obviously he was in the champion hurdle, only finished eighth to Bouvardet despite starting at just 13-2. Went to Punchestown again, finished unplaced. And so I was sort of dead against him at Sandown in the Henry VIII Novices Chase, thinking he didn't have the grade one form. He unseated, albeit when in contention behind Under So, and then another grade one at Ascot, he fell. Now Henderson reckons that he is a genuine grade one animal and that the wind up could be the key to him. So it'll be fascinating to see how he gets on the back of two non-completions if he does go for the Arkle. Now, Henderson's only had three runners that have turned up after a wind operation since wind surgery had to be declared in the middle of January, and two of those have won. So maybe Braying Power can make it three from four, but obviously his jumping has to be a cause for concern given the form figures of U and F going into this race.
He runs in the Arkle. Henderson's got a solid favourite, in my eyes anyway, for the Triumph Hurdle in Apple. Shakira has won a few times at Cheltenham already this season. And even though there are other ones that she has to beat, We Have a Dream potentially as well as another Henderson horse, she does hold leading claims in the division.
Well, it was hard not to be impressed by this one on a British debut at the Cheltenham meeting in November, when she beat Gumball by 17 lengths. It was a sort of 2-1, 9-4 shot until not long before the start of the race, of 15, 20 minutes. And then the tide came back in, a massive gamble ensued. She was not hard pressed to follow up again at Cheltenham at prohibitive odds the following time, 1-10. And then again at Cheltenham in January, where winning this time at odds of 1-7. She finds for pressure, and there could be any amount of improvement to come. So, yeah, the one to beat at the moment.
I want to put in a quick mention for the Henderson pair that he thinks are going to run in the Ballymore at the moment. I know taking on Sam Crow isn't exactly the cool thing to do at the moment, but on the blind side, an OK Corral, two horses that I don't think should be ignored in this division.
No, I was impressed with on the blind side's Cheltenham win. I was a bit gutted, actually, because I'd bet the second in that race, Mamela, trained by Dan Skelton. And that one was battling it out with Poetic Rhythm, or so it seemed, the Fergal O'Brien runner. And on the blind side, was one of the sort of first off the bridle, got outpaced at a crucial stage, and he thought was going to go backwards. But he's rallied particularly strongly and scored by 2.5 lengths in that Grade 2 contest. Gone to Sandown next time, another Grade 2, and he's absolutely bolted up by 9 lengths from Springtown Lake. I love these horses who keep finding when they come off the bridle. Altior, for example, was one that impressed me in his early starts doing the same thing. And of course, if you include his point-to-point form, it's now 4 wins from 4 runs for on the blind side. So he's the kind of solid, battle-hardened horse that I'd quite like to go to war with at Cheltenham. And I think each way around 5-1 for the Ballymore is going to be hard to keep out the first 3 famous last words.
Does seem to be a feature of these Henderson horses, doesn't it? I mean, obviously each horse is different, but a lot of them do tend to find plenty for pressure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anything else in the Henderson string you would like to mention ahead of the Cheltenham Festival? 20 days to go. Are we only at the little 20 on your advent calendar there?
No, not yet. So still not seen the full list of handicap entries.
But yes.
Obviously what he runs in the Johnny Henderson Grand Annual will be of particular interest.
He reported to the Racing Post a little bit earlier in the week that he is thinking of running Divine Spear, and that's and The Inval as well. Those are the only two mentioned horses he's mentioned for the race at this moment in time.
And then, of course, The Inval ran third at 9-1 in the Grand Annual last year, only beaten by about 2 lengths behind Rock the World. Had a similar preparation this time out, went into that race off a break since December, and we've not seen this one since Cheltenham on the 1st of January.
Fantastic. Right, that's Nicky Henderson's string for the Cheltenham Festival. I think we've managed to get through quite a long, complicated subject in about 10 minutes in a nutshell. Quite well there, Andrew.
Yeah, pleased with that.
Well done. Well done to you. Good to have you on the podcast. Make sure you tune into Racing Radio tomorrow, and Andrew, we'll see you back here very soon.
Thanks, John. It's been a pleasure.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.